Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. It's March 15, 2021, live to be rebroadcast March 17, 2021 on 91.7 FM WHUS Storrs. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut on Mondays at 10 o'clock a.m. on Facebook Live. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. All right, so what's the first thing? First thing is today's the Ides of March.
Yay,
you should beware of them.
The Ides of March.
Yeah, so you're supposed to beware of them because apparently that's when Julius Caesar was assassinated, right?
Yeah.
By Et tu, Brute, and all that.
He got the knife and all that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you're listening on Wednesday live on WHUS 91.7 FM, it's St. Patrick's Day. So I thought I'd talk a little bit about the history of St. Patrick's Day, just to run through it a little bit. The real St. Patrick is known as a symbol of Ireland, particularly around March, and he's not pagan because, you know, after all, he's a saint. There's some discussion about him each year because he's allegedly the guy who drove ancient Irish paganism away from the Emerald Isle. But before we talk about that, who was he actually? Did you know that some modern pagans refuse to observe a day that honors the elimination of an old religion in favor of a new one, and they wear a snake symbol on St. Patrick's Day? The idea that St. Patrick physically drove the pagans from Ireland is inaccurate. What he did do was facilitate the spread of Christianity. Oh. And the real St. Patrick was believed to have been born around 370 CE. Interesting that this source I'm reading says CE. Do you know what CE stands for?
No.
It stands for Common Era. So here's a little factoid.
Era meaning E-R-A.
Yeah. Yeah. B.C. means what?
Before Christ.
A.D. means?
After death.
No. I mean, I think some people think that, but that's not, and that makes sense. That's what I used to think, too.
That's what I always used to hear it
and
as.
It's not. It's Anno Domini. It means the year of our Lord.
Oh.
But yes, but people think it means after death, and I used to think that, too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a neat little factoid for you. AD actually stands for Anno Domini, which means the year of our Lord. So we in the Jewish community, and I'm not sure about other more inclusive schools of thought, but definitely in the Jewish community, we don't say BC and we don't say AD. We say BCE and we say CE. Do you know what BCE stands for?
No.
Before the Common Era. CE stands for the Common Era. And this source that I'm reading from right now, Learn Religions, uses the term CE.
Wow.
So I feel included. I feel seen. I am here.
I feel informed.
Yeah, it's just a little cool thing that you learned. So the real St. Patrick was thought to be born in 370 CE, probably in Wales or Scotland, not even Ireland, and that his birth name was Maywin, and he's probably the son of a Roman Briton named Calpurnius. Maywin was captured during a raid and sold to an Irish landowner as a slave. During his time in Ireland, where he worked as a shepherd, he began to have religious visions and dreams, one that showed him how to escape captivity. Then he went back to France, where he studied in a monastery, and he returned to Ireland to care for the salvation of others. So he wasn't even originally Irish. He was originally possibly Welsh or Scottish, and he had what sounds like a very Celtic-sounding name. And I'm probably not even pronouncing it right. The question is, did he really drive away paganism? It's thought that he supposedly drove the snakes out of Ireland, and he's even credited with a miracle for this. And there's a popular theory that the serpent was actually a metaphor for the early pagan faiths. However, the idea that Patrick physically drove the pagans from Ireland is inaccurate, but he facilitated the spread of Christianity throughout Ireland. So many people have worked to debunk the notion of Patrick driving early paganism out, and it was active both before and after Patrick came along, according to the scholar Ronald Hutton, who says in his book Blood and Mistletoe, A History of the Druids in Britain, that the importance of the Druids countering Patrick's missionary work was inflated in later centuries under the influence of biblical parallels. And then Patrick's visit to Tara was given a pivotal importance that it really wasn't there. Irish colonists in areas like around Cornwall and sub-Roman Britain had already encountered Christianity and elsewhere and brought bits and pieces of the religion back to their homelands. So today, St. Patrick's Day is celebrated in many places on March 17th, often with a parade, which is an oddly American invention, lots of other festivities, like in Dublin, Belfast, and Derry in Ireland. The annual celebrations are a big deal. The first St. Patrick's Day parade was in Boston at Massachusetts in 1737. Mm. And Boston, what percentage of Irish do you think are in Boston? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, but it's a lot, right? Some modern pagans, they won't observe St. Patrick's Day because they think that, you know, St. Patrick drove paganism out of Ireland. So that's kind of interesting. Another fascinating tradition is in Chicago, they turn that river green.
They do.
They color, it's not like Michigan, it's a river that goes through Chicago.
Right.
That they color green.
It's a river
green.
That becomes the canals that go through Chicago, but I can't remember exactly what it is.
Right, and they've actually reduced the number of green coloring. It's a non-toxic coloring, but they've actually reduced the amount for biological reasons. Mm-hmm. So because it would stay green for several days, now it just stays green for a few hours. So, but it's like bright green. It's kind of cool. So other St. Patrick Day, you know, people like to go and they like to drink and they drink Guinness or they drink green beer or they eat corned beef and cabbage. Do you want to have corned beef and cabbage tonight?
I do not.
Do you not like corned beef and cabbage?
I'm not a big cabbage fan.
What about corned beef?
I'll have to explore it. I can't remember why I have a thing about corned beef and cabbage, but it never really did much for me.
I like corned beef. I just don't like the fatty, gristly part.
Right. Maybe that's what it is.
Well, what I might do is I might go to
You're in charge
store.
Of that if you want to have that.
Well, I might go to the store and just get some cold cuts.
Mark my words. Fran is in charge of that if she wants to have that.
Yeah.
We will not be having corned beef and cabbage.
No, but I did get some gluten-free Irish soda bread. Would you enjoy the gluten-free Irish soda bread?
I know your history, my dear.
Yeah, okay. Mm. All right. So anyway, did you know that it's still International Women's Month, and I'd like to profile another wonderful woman naturopathic physician who has done a lot for our profession. And that's Lise Altschuler, who's a naturopathic physician. And she's a breast cancer survivor. And her focus is on, whereas, you know, I spoke about Tori Hudson last week, Lise Altschuler, when I think naturopathic treatment of cancer, I think of Lise Altschuler. So she's board certified in naturopathic oncology and has been practicing since 1994. So she's only been practicing a year longer than me, but maybe somewhat more driven than I am. So go, Lise. She's a professor of clinical medicine at the University of Arizona, where she's the assistant director of the Fellowship in Integrative Medicine at the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine. She graduated from Brown University. Yeah, with an undergraduate degree in medical anthropology and received a doctoral degree in naturopathic medicine from Bastyr University. So I wasn't in school with her. So I would have been in school with her for 3 years if she had been at NCNM, but she was up in Seattle. So Dr. Altschuler is past president and board member of the American Association of Naturopathic Physicians. She's a founding board member and immediate past president of the Oncology Association of Naturopathic Physicians. She's been an invited speaker to more than 100 scientific and medical conferences, and I've seen her speak many times, and she's an excellent speaker, and she gives out wonderful information, and I always feel armed when I hear Dr. Altschuler speak, that I have more information to go back and help my patients with. She was the ANP Physician of the Year in 2014. She received an honorary degree from the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine and the Joe Pizzorno Founders Award from Bastyr University in the same year. And she was honored with the ANP President's Award in 2016 and received the Impact Award from the National Association of Nutrition Professionals in 2017. She's the founding executive director of TAP Integrative, a nonprofit web-based educational resource for integrative practitioners, and practices naturopathic oncology out of Naturopathic Specialists, LLC. She's the co-founder of 5 to Thrive, LLC, which has developed the iThrive plan and the SAAS mobile web application that creates customized wellness plans for cancer survivors. She maintains a naturopathic oncology practice of naturopathic specialists in Scottsdale, Arizona. And she also has a podcast, which you could listen to. And it's called 5 to Thrive Live on the Cancer Support Network. And it's about living more healthily in the face of cancer. She was previously the department head of naturopathic medicine at Midwestern Regional Medical Center, Cancer Treatment Centers of America. She was also the clinic medical director and botanical medicine chair at Bastyr and on the faculty at Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine. And she envisions a world where all individuals with diseases are offered personalized integrative care and are empowered to live exuberant and meaningful lives. And she lives in Tucson, Arizona right now. Okay. Nice and warm down there.
I'll bet it is.
Yes. One of the things, so I visited with my friend Stephanie yesterday, and Stephanie, of course, is staying up in Turner's Falls, Massachusetts, and we talked about whether she might come to Massachusetts to stay or stay back in Arizona. One of the things she loves about Arizona is that if it's winter in Flagstaff and she wants to go swimming in a swimming hole outdoors, she travels 4 hours and it's warm. And any time of year, doesn't matter the time of year. We can't do that, you know.
Even I think it's even better. It seems like it only was about an hour and a half to Sonoma. Which was...
Sonoma, you mean Sedona?
Sedona, excuse me, Sonoma.
Sonoma's in California.
Right. To Sedona, which I thought was a lot warmer also, but...
Yeah, no, no, no. It's in the mountains.
You got to go to Phoenix.
Well, she said 4 hours, she said even... Well, I guess Phoenix is about 4 hours away, but yeah. She said there's a close place that she can go where it's warm. I said, you can go down to Tucson. She said, no, I don't have to go as far as Tucson. So that was kind of interesting. But what struck me here is that there is this iThrive Plan mobile web app. So that's interesting. That's something to look at if you're looking to get some help with naturopathic care around, you know, with well-designed plans to help you with naturopathic oncology. So that's interesting. Okay, so the next big thing in the news, of course, is, let's see, it was Friday the 19th. No, it was not Friday the 19th. It was last Friday.
Not the 19th yet.
No, you're right. It's not the 19th of...
we're getting there.
Yes.
Rush it.
So what day was Friday? This past Friday, a week ago Friday, Friday the 5th, right? I was having a talk with my staff and saying how sad I was that I haven't seen my mother in, you know, since last January. And I would love to see my mother. My mother would love to see me. And so we all planned to get vaccinated so we could spend time together. And my mother and I, and Ron as well, we're all more than 2 weeks out from our COVID-19 vaccinations. So we're considered to be fully vaccinated. So any of the new new recommendations apply to us. So I was lamenting that in Connecticut, there was still this rule that you had to, that if you left the state for more than 24 hours, you had to either have a within 3 days, you had to have a negative COVID-19 test, or you had to have a you had to quarantine for 10 days, and that I wasn't going to go visit my mother until that was lifted because I can't afford to stay out of work that long. And while I was the words were coming out of my mouth, the plan for that requirement had been lifted. It's not lifted yet. It will be lifted on what's today? It'll be lifted on Friday. That's why I was excited about Friday the 19th, because right. It is Friday the 19th. That will be the first day that that's lifted. So for the next 4 days, if you leave the state for more than 24 hours, you have to quarantine and have a negative COVID test for within 3 days, and either or. And as of Friday, you don't have to do that anymore. You just have to follow recommendations. And so that's exciting. So as soon as I heard that, I spoke to my mother on the 6th, and she said to me, I wanted to talk to you because I heard they had lifted that ban in Connecticut. It was on the news. I'm like, what? And I hadn't heard it. I didn't know. I mean, and I was all sad and complaining the day before, and it was already in the news. My mother had already heard it. So that weekend, I immediately made plans for Ron and I. Ron and I bought plane tickets, and we're going to Florida May 1st through the... May 1st through the 8th.
Yay.
Yeah. And if you would like, I don't know if you can schlep this microphone with us, we could do Radio Naturopath in Florida.
We absolutely can.
Okay. So yeah. You'll schlep the mic and we'll just do Radio Naturopath in Florida. We can do it on my laptop or whatever.
That's the plan.
What we'll do. Mm-hmm. That will be really cool. And maybe we could get my mom to be on the show. That will be fun. So that'll be really nice. Okay. And so so here's what's going on. There are now new recommendations by the CDC for what fully vaccinated people can do. Fully vaccinated people defined as having had both doses of either Moderna or Pfizer COVID-19 vaccination, and you're at least 2 weeks past the second dose, or having had the Johnson & Johnson or also known as, by the way, Johnson & Johnson and Janssen are the same vaccine. Johnson & Johnson is the parent company. Janssen is its pharmaceutical division. Johnson & Johnson oversees other things like the part that makes body care products like baby powder. That's not Janssen. That's Johnson & Johnson. So Janssen is the division that makes the drugs. Okay. So anyway, so if you hear Johnson & Johnson or Janssen, that's that vaccine. And if you get that vaccine, you get one dose, and 2 weeks later, you're considered to be fully vaccinated. So here's what fully vaccinated people can do. Now, they can visit with other fully vaccinated people indoors without wearing masks or physical distancing, which is why we made the plans to go visit my mom.
Right.
They can visit with unvaccinated people from a single household who are at low risk for severe COVID-19 disease indoors without wearing masks or physical distancing, which I did yesterday. I hung out with Stephanie and Richard, who really aren't hanging out with anybody. You can refrain from quarantine and testing following a known exposure if you're asymptomatic. If you're symptomatic, of course, you still have to get tested. But if you're asymptomatic, you don't have to quarantine or test, even if you've been exposed to somebody. And for now, fully vaccinated people should still continue to, do you hear me? Should still continue to do the following things. You should still take precautions in public, like wearing a well-fitted mask and physical distancing. You should wear masks, practice physical distancing, and adhere to other prevention measures when visiting with unvaccinated people who are at increased risk for severe COVID-19 disease or who have an unvaccinated household member who is at increased risk for severe COVID-19 disease. You should wear masks, maintain physical distance, and practice other prevention measures when visiting with unvaccinated people from multiple households. You should avoid medium and large size in-person gatherings. You should get tested if you're experiencing COVID-19 symptoms, and you should follow guidance issued by individual employers, and you should follow CDC and health department travel requirements and recommendations. So if there are any travel, depending on where you're going, then you have to follow, you still have to follow the recommendations of wherever you're going or coming back from. And be aware that right now in Italy, they're having a fourth wave.
I heard that.
Yes, they're having a fourth wave in Italy. And
that's not good.
Brazil is not doing well either. Hmm. And largely because they don't have good oversight in that country. And
Brazil's doing terrible.
Yes.
Brazil is on a record-breaking.
Yeah. They have more cases than we do in the mm-hmm. U.S. Yeah, it's really unfortunate.
Yeah, Brazil's not good.
Yeah, so you want to follow any recommendations regarding those. You probably don't want to go to Italy right now, but I don't know if Italy would let us in anyway. But Italy is in having a fourth wave, unfortunately, and they're shutting down businesses and schools and things like that in Italy, and so that's really sad. So if I'm vaccinated, why do I still have to follow all of these precautions? Because the jury's still not out. The science is still not out. That's why we don't remember how. If you get, the statistic is you're 94 to 95% protected if you've gotten the Moderna or the Pfizer vaccine, and that you're 85% protected from severe disease if you get the J&J Janssen vaccine. That means that you're either 15 or 5%, there's a 5% chance that you could get sick because they don't, right now, one of the unfortunate things is that we don't have quantitative antibody testing. And you would need to have antibody testing for the spike protein. There's not I don't know if they're doing it in the clinical trials, but there's not readily available. Like if you order, the only testing you can do right now for SARS-CoV-2 is you can get a nasal swab, which is a PCR test, and it tells you about the presence of PCR detected, and it tells you detected or not detected. It doesn't tell you level. The other thing you can get readily available from Quest Diagnostics or from LabCorp or from, you know, name your the lab that you're using is the SARS-CoV antibody test, SARS-CoV-2 antibody test. And again, it is not quantitative. It is qualitative. Either you have it or you don't. And that is unfortunate because it would be nice to know how much antibody you actually had. If you're doing an antibody test, what is your antibody titer? How much antibody you actually have? And we want a number for what is the protective level of antibody. So if you have a titer of only, I don't know, I don't know what the level, I'm throwing out random numbers, so don't quote me on this. So say you have a titer of 1 to 8, that might not be enough to protect you. But if you have a titer of 1 to 320, maybe it is. So what's the cutoff for that? And so we don't have that information. And it would be great because when you do antibody titers, you can do antibody titers for measles, mumps, rubella, tetanus, stuff like that. And there's a cutoff. There's an actual cutoff. If you have below this level of antibodies, you're not immune. But they don't have that yet for SARS-CoV. It's not widely available. So that is unfortunate. So you can't tell how immune you are. And because you can't tell how immune you are, we don't have a quantitative way of knowing how the general population responded to any one vaccine. So we don't know if Ron or I responded effectively to the vaccine. I mean, we have a good idea that we had a response because we both had symptoms after we had our vaccinations. So we assume that we have decent antibodies. And the assumption is that we have enough antibodies that we can go visit my mother, who also had a decent immune response to the vaccine. And we can go and sit in her house and be unmasked. And that's what the CDC is recommending now. So we have that level of confidence. But we don't know for sure. And because we don't know for sure, we don't know if we can actually pick up the virus and our nice antibodies are going to chew it up. But while it's not 100% chewed up, we could then transmit it to someone who can pick it up and then become very ill from it. So we don't have that information. And that is why even if you've been vaccinated, you still have to wear a mask. It's mostly to protect others. And to a small extent, it's to protect you because we don't know 100% if you're going to get such a huge dose of virus that you're still going to get sick. The viruses are not, none of the vaccines are 100%. They work very, very well, but they're not 100%. So you still need to protect yourself. So that's why you still have to take precautions. And so if you're in public, if you go to the store, you still have to wear your mask. If you're going to be in a large gathering, you need to wear a mask. And if you're going to somebody's house and there are people who are at risk, so people who have cardiovascular disease, people who have high blood pressure, people who are obese, people who have asthma, people who have autoimmune disease, and you're going to visit them in their house and they're letting you in, you still need to wear your mask. Because there's that small chance that you picked up the virus and you're carrying it and you could carry it to them. So you still have to be careful. And you should follow the CDC guidelines until they tell us that we have science that says you could do something else. So we're going to probably be wearing masks into 2022, I hate to say it. So if you see a cute mask that you like and it's a sturdy mask, I found these masks on Etsy that were the three layers with a pouch for a filter, and they're really pretty. They come in flowers. I got lots of flowery ones because I think flowery ones are good for work. You know, I have these hilarious. These young people come in who are gamers, and they're into they're into Marvel and DC comics, especially Marvel. And they come in with gaiters on, and the gaiters have the Joker's face on it, or they have a big skeleton mouth on it. A young man came in and he had a Joker mask on, and I didn't see it when he was sitting in the waiting room, and I came out and I saw him and I just burst out laughing, and it took me a while to stop laughing because he had this big Joker grin on his face, and he was just a very nice young man, and he didn't act like the Joker at all. He was very pleasant and he gave a good history, and I had a very enjoyable visit with him, but he had this big Joker smile on. It was funny.
Okay.
So find out the exact names of those lovely young men who ran the UConn podcast symposium.
I'll get it in a second.
Okay. Yeah. So we want to thank them before we want to tell you about the shirts that we're wearing today. But we'll do that in a little bit. Okay. So just so you know, that's what we want you to do. We want you to follow the recommendations of the CDC and get cute masks. They not only should they be cute, they should be effective. So the ones I found, like I said, they're very comfortable. They cover my mouth and nose quite comfortably. They have good ear loops and they have their three layers. So you know how they're recommending you wear two masks. It's probably not necessary to wear two masks if you've got a three-layer mask that also has a place for a filter and you put the filter in. Then that's like wearing two masks. I'm wondering how those masks are going to feel in the summer. Right now, it's fine because today, you know, we had those beautiful, Thursday and Friday were just absolutely gorgeous. We had weather in the 60s, right? And then went into the 40s and windy over the weekend. Now today, we might see 30 degrees in Mansfield. Hooray. Welcome to March in Connecticut. Do, do, do. Up and down and up and down, up and down. Okay. So, as soon as you get those names, we'll thank our hosts. And in the meantime, what I want to do is I wanted us to do our protein calculations. We want to calculate what our protein level should be. Because I've discovered that a lot of people don't eat enough protein. They really don't. So I wanted Ron and I to use a protein calculator and figure out how much protein we should be eating in a day.
Oh gosh. Hang on. You got me on two dirt journeys here.
Yeah. So while Ron is on his first journey,
yes,
I'll just share with you that I've had a couple of patients come in complaining about difficulty losing weight, and mostly women. They're coming in complaining they have difficulty losing weight. Most of them are perimenopausal, that because it's harder to lose weight when you're perimenopausal. Now, mind you, perimenopausal often means 40s. Women in their 40s who are coming in complaining that they've gained weight. And of course, there's the COVID-15 or the COVID-19 or whatever you want to call it. So hold that thought while we show you our beautiful shirts. Notice the shirts are the blue of the blue and white of UConn. So last Monday, a week ago today, we were fortunate enough to attend by Zoom the UConn Podcast Symposium. See, Ron has the same shirt on.
I
insisted that we wear the shirts. And look, it goes with my eyes. Isn't that nice? Mm. All right. So what was the UConn Podcast Symposium? It was put together by two UConn students, and their names are Mukund Desbaltia and Vinayak Mishra. So they put their two producers on WHUS. And they put together this symposium. So they had a live lecture on Monday, and then they had a live lecture on Sunday, and then a panel on Monday, which we participated in and I believe was recorded. So there were a number of producers on there. There was Kira, who produces the DNA Today podcast, and there was that nice young fella who does the marketing podcast, and he was really fun. And then Vinayak and Mukund. And we got to chat about what it was like to do our podcast, what inspired us to do our podcast, and how we get the content. And of course, some people are inspired to do a podcast because they just want to do a podcast, and then they have to think about what they want to talk about on our podcast. Mine didn't come about that way. Mine came about because I was already a naturopathic physician. And when I started off in St. John's, Newfoundland, I had to figure out ways to market my practice. And because I was blessed to not be afraid of public speaking, or maybe that's not entirely true. Maybe it's more that I said, okay, if you're afraid of public speaking, lose that yesterday because you have to speak publicly. So I got very good at speaking publicly, especially because Newfoundland, I was the first naturopathic physician there, and I had to run around and tell everybody what I was. And so I got very good at speaking anytime, anywhere, to anyone, to three people, to 3,000 people, it didn't matter. And I've spoken to, you know, maybe 1,000 people at a time. I haven't had that opportunity in a long time, but certainly to several hundred anyway. So my start in podcasting just came from, I already had a radio show, and then people kept asking me, is this podcasted, when podcasting became a thing? And then finally WHUS, I'm so grateful to WHUS for this opportunity, but WHUS made it easy for anyone who is part of WHUS to create podcasts, and you can have your podcast be a radio show, and then, you know, it's played later as a podcast, or you can just produce a podcast and it doesn't ever have to be on WHUS. So they let you do it however you want there. And, you know, if you're a member, you get to do it. And it's just really a wonderful, wonderful opportunity. And I'm so grateful to WHUS for allowing me to do this for all these years, for Jason McMullen is the one who trained me to upload my, you know, to edit and upload my podcast. He sat with me, physically, when you could do such things. And he taught me exactly what to do. I brought my laptop and he told me exactly what to do and gave me, you know, a template and taught me what to do. And you had help from Drew,
Right.
Yeah, and Drew, good old Drew back in the day, and Drew, who was our buddy, and Drew, who we used to call each other, we used to make up names for each other that were that linked to whatever the topic was for the week. So for example, I might call, if Drew was going to get his vaccine, I might call him Drewcine that week or something silly like that. Or if I was talking about berries that week, how good berries were for you, Drew would call me Franberry. And that's how we'd greet each other. And it was a game and it went on for 2 years. It was fantastic. So we want to just really thank Vikund and Mukund and Vinyak for putting together the podcast and getting us these cool shirts.
Yeah.
We got a cool shirt and we also got cool masks, which are in the other room.
It was fun because we actually felt like we knew what we were doing.
Yeah. Right. Oh, my goodness.
As we were learning as we go along every day. Well, every day is a challenge.
Of course, it was on Zoom and we had to do Zoom again. So what are you going to do? I feel like people talk about how they have Zoom fatigue. I don't feel like I do, but it's also because I have 3 long work days and those are really the only days that I use. And I don't do Zoom patient evidence. Like right now, most of my patients want to come in live. So the proportion of remote visits differs from day to day. Some days it's mostly remote. I'll have 8 patients and 6 of them will be remote. And then I'll have another day where I have 9 patients and 2 of them will be remote. And I'm still not using just Zoom because if people have iPhones, they like to use FaceTime. And I'm still able to use WhatsApp and I'm able to use Facebook Messenger sometimes. But mostly, so I'm using either Zoom or FaceTime, sometimes Facebook Messenger, and it depends. So anyway, and then some people just want to talk on the phone, which is fine too. So we're doing whatever works for people. But anyway, thank goodness for that podcast symposium. Thank goodness for WHUS for providing the platform to do it. All right, so let's go back to Ron and I figuring out the protein situation. So as I said, I have found that some women come in complaining, especially if they're perimenopausal, they're complaining they have difficulty losing weight. They complain that they're losing hair and they complain that they're anxious and depressed. And then they tell me that they feel the best when they eat mostly plant foods. So I say, okay. And fortunately, a couple of women came in recently and they use fitness trackers. I said, great, go ahead. So go into your fitness tracker, whether it's MyFitnessPal, Lose It, WW, Noom, whatever. Does it give you your macros? Yes, it gives me my macros. Okay, go ahead and look. All right, so I had a woman look at her fitness tracker and it showed that she was eating 10% of her daily requirements of protein. I said, really, does it give it to you in grams? And she said, yes. And it was some really low number, like, it was like 5 grams or something like that. And mind you, these women come in and they tell me they have a hard time losing weight, they have food cravings, they're losing their hair, and they have mood disorders. So, and then we find out not eating enough protein. So, how much protein is enough protein for you? Let's find out. Okay, so here's a neat protein calculator. There's many protein calculators online. I'm going to use the one that's calculator.net, but there are other ones. There's American Dietetic Association. You can find lots of protein calculators online, but they're very easy. So, and they come in US units, metric units, and other units. I don't know what those are. I'm not going to look. But anyway, so the first thing I have to do is plug in my age. My age is 57. So I plug in 57. I plug in my gender, which is female. I plug in my height. Let's see if it lets me do 3.5. Because I'm 5 foot 3.5. There we go. And I plug in my weight, which I'm estimating right now is about 155. Activity level. So tell me what you think. Exercise 1 to 3 times a week. Exercise 4 to 5 times a week. Daily exercise or intense exercise 3 to 4 times a week. Intense exercise 6 to 7 times a week.
I would say intense 3 to 4.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So let's use that one. Okay. So I'm going to calculate my protein from that. All right. So based on the given information from multiple authoritative institutions, so the American Dietetic Association says that I need to eat at least 70 to 127 grams a day. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says between 48 to 167 grams. So that 48 is on the very low end.
Mm-hmm.
And the World Health Organization, the safe lower limit is 58 grams a day. So that's 58 grams. So I have to, so really somewhere, I should be eating no less than 48 grams. According to World Health Organization, 58 grams. And according to American Dietetic Association, 70 grams. Now, I did my Fitness Pal yesterday, and let's make sure I did my Fitness Pal, that I entered everything yesterday. And if I didn't, I'll look at 2 days ago. So if we go to my Fitness Pal yesterday, and we look at our, so we look at our diary, and we go to our macro, we go to our macros yesterday. So the protein goals, so I really didn't do very well yesterday. I ate 43 grams of protein yesterday. So
really,
although let me see if I entered lunch. Yeah, I entered the lunch. Yes, I only ate 43 grams of protein. So I could do better eating protein. So that's really interesting. All right. So you, we don't know because we didn't do a calculation on you, but we can figure out your protein grams. So let's do that. So Ron, you are 65 years of age?
Oh, God. Yes.
So I want to say again, if you want to do this for yourself, don't do this if you're driving. Make sure you're pulled over.
Right.
But if you're in your house and you want to pull this up somewhere on your phone or on a different device than what you're listening on, you can go to calculator.net and there's a protein calculator there. Mind you, as I said, you can just Google protein calculator and you'll come up with a number of them. All right. So you are 65 years of age and you are a dude. What should we put your height as?
5'8".
Okay, let's put you at 5'8". And what should we put your weight as?
Right now, about 140.
Okay. Wow, you gained some weight.
I did.
And your exercise level, little or none, that's what we should put.
Well, right now it is. It's not little or none, but
is
it's...
Is it one to three times a week or four to five times a week?
It was last week, it was four to five times a week.
So... All right. Do you plan to continue to do 4 to 5 times a week?
Yes.
Okay. So let's do 4 to 5 times a week.
I'm in spring training.
So this is, but remember, there's another option, which is daily exercise or intense exercise 3 to 4 times a week.
Oh.
Do you want to use the 4 to 5 times a week? Do you want to use the intense exercise 3 to 4 times a week?
It's not intense yet.
Okay. So let's do you want to do the 4 to 5.
I would keep it where it was.
Okay. Yeah. Very good. So let's calculate for you. So, so you're at 64 to 100, and your protein needs are less than mine because I'm working out harder.
Right.
Yep.
And you're smaller than me.
So it's 64 to 114 grams a day, and the CDC says you should be eating anywhere from 50 to 174 grams, and the safe lower limit's 53 grams a day. So what that means, so we don't know exactly how much protein you're eating. You're probably eating more than me because you eat eggs for breakfast, and I don't do that. And so I could do better at eating protein. So I'm going to have to figure that out. I'm going to have to eat. And I think the thing to do for me is going to be figure out how to eat more protein at lunch or, you know, in the middle of the day. Cause we eat a nice dose of protein at dinner time.
Yeah.
You know, I have to do it throughout the day and through snacks. So that's kind of interesting. So if you don't eat enough protein, that can be really hard for you. So think about it. So these women come in and they say they're losing their hair. Well, if you eat more protein, you'll maintain more hair. You're just, the thing about hair loss and protein consumption is that your body doesn't care about your hair as much as it cares about your skeletal muscles, doesn't care about your skeletal muscles as much as it cares about your heart, your lungs, and all of your organs that have smooth muscle, your whole digestive system. It cares about that stuff more than it cares about your skin, than it cares about your hair. So if your skin is dry or you don't like the quality of your skin, if you're getting wrinkles, if you're losing your hair, that can mean that something more serious is going on inside. And that you're in a deficit. If your hair starts to come back and your skin improves and your muscle mass improves, that means that you're getting more, that your protein levels are more adequate. So losing hair is a sign that you're not getting enough protein. I mean, it can be a sign of a lot of other things, but that is one of the things it's a sign of. Are you eating enough protein? I have to remember that every single person who tells me that they're losing hair, I need to check to see if they're eating enough protein. And that's a very simple, because it's a very simple thing that they can change. It's a lot harder to change, like to dial in a hypothyroid issue, to dial in your stress. But if you are not eating enough protein, you will feel more stressed. And so a very simple reason why, okay, so it helps with hair loss. It helps with mood. How does it help with mood? Very simply, can't have a neurotransmitter if you don't have an amino acid. Where do you get your amino acids? From protein. All right. So that's very important to know. I didn't do 2 days in a row. I took branched chain amino acids and I didn't put those in the protein calculator. And I should do that because it might give me some points for eating, for consuming the branched chain amino acids. And I'm finding that I'm going to try. So by the way, if you're interested in building muscle mass, two things, building muscle mass and also, calming delayed onset muscle soreness, in other words, recovering from exercise activity, you can take branched chain amino acids the same day that you have done the heavy exercise, preferably within half an hour of having done the exercise, because then your body is very it's very primed to take up the protein, to take up the amino acids into your cells. So you can consider doing branched chain amino acids. You can also consider doing a protein shake. If you're not dairy intolerant, whey protein is a great way to go. And we're going to talk about protein shakes. Okay, so the other thing. So what do we say? We said hair loss. We said your mood. We said fat loss. Well, can protein help with weight loss? There's all kinds of studies that says yes. And why would it do that? Well, protein is very satisfying. If you eat adequate protein, you won't have as much cravings. If you have food cravings, you may not be eating enough protein. If you have food cravings for carbs, you still may not be eating enough protein. And so protein will raise insulin to an extent, but the thing is, when you eat calories from protein, most of the protein goes to all the places I said. It goes to making amino acids to build your skin, to build your hair, to build your skeletal muscle, to build your smooth muscle, to make enzymes. And so when you eat protein is generally not going to make you fat. I mean, if you eat tons and tons of it, if you eat way too much food for your needs, it can go up in fat. It doesn't have a great pathway to turn into fat. So if you eat adequate protein, but not excessive so that you're stuffed, most of the protein is going to go to rebuild you. That's what it's going to do. And it helps to dampen those cravings. So it helps with fat loss because it's going to help you to build muscle mass. It's going to help to dampen cravings. So you're not going to eat as much stuff that's going to cause you to gain weight. It helps to keep your insulin lower. And if you have more muscle mass, your metabolism tends to be higher because muscle mass is metabolically active tissue. So it sits and it burns calories for you even while I'm sitting here talking to you. So you have that afterburn effect, and the afterburn effect can be significant if you have more muscle mass. So people who do resistance training, they're going to have a nice afterburn effect. And if you're constantly in a place where you're using muscles to the point where you're getting good muscle mass, even if it is by doing cardio, you're going to be able to increase your metabolic rate. So it can help with it can help with all of those things. It can help with fat loss. It can help with mood. It can help with sleep because, again, you're going to be making amino acids that are going to calm you down. And your mood is going to be better. You're going to be less anxious and you're going to be less depressed because you have better production of neurotransmitters. So just remember that eating protein, if you're getting inadequate protein, there's all these things that can be more difficult for you. And it sometimes the fat loss thing is as simple as that, you know, people are eating, they crave carbs or they think they need too much carbs and they don't eat protein throughout the day. So what are some neat tricks to get more protein in? Well, remember, you know, some of you are going to say, but I'm a vegetarian. And this is what I see, that people who tell me they're vegetarians, their protein levels are usually, they often don't eat enough protein. That if you're going to be a vegetarian or a vegan, they're relying on protein sources that are not giving them adequate protein, or they're relying on dairy to give them protein, and not everybody does well with dairy. Dairy gives a lot of people inflammation. Doesn't give everybody inflammation, but it gives a lot of people inflammation. And the other issue with dairy is that dairy protein raises your insulin. Dairy was created to cause growth. That's what it does. When a baby is born, when a mammalian baby is born, regardless of what kind of mammal it is, it's supposed to nurse, and it's supposed to nurse on its mother's milk, whether it's a cow or a cat or a goat or a sheep or an us or an elephant or a zebra. They all are supposed to nurse. And so casein and whey, which are the chief proteins in dairy, they raise insulin and they cause growth, which is why people take whey protein shakes after they do their workouts, because the whey protein is going to help them quickly build muscle mass. So having snacks throughout the day, if you want to do vegetarian sources of protein, we talked about how tempeh is a great source of protein. So are peanuts. So if you eat some peanuts are a good source of protein. But if you want to have animal sources of protein throughout the day, and you're not going to sit down and eat a sandwich, maybe you want to have some healthy jerky, some jerky that has very little added sugar and doesn't have nitrates in it. You can get, I had this nice turkey stick that I got at the store yesterday. That was a nice thing. You can keep prepared, as long as they don't have nitrates added and they don't have preservatives added. Those are things you can keep around and you can just grab and eat. You can keep cold cuts in your fridge and just grab on them and make sure they don't have excessive amounts of, they don't have preservatives and they don't have salt and they don't have nitrates. Those are things you can grab. And then think about, if your thing is to have yogurt for lunch and you're not a vegetarian, consider having something else. Maybe you want to do some tuna salad, or maybe you want to actually cook some chicken and have it in something for lunch. I know it's tough if you're traveling, if you're eating at work, or if you're not at home, you're on the go, which is why having easy to go sources of protein is good. If you're not allergic to eggs, carry hard boiled eggs with you. One medium egg. So an egg doesn't have a lot of protein per egg. One medium egg only has 6 grams of protein. Did you know that?
No.
Not a huge source of protein. And when you look at, like, cottage cheese, very interestingly, has a lot of protein in it. Cottage cheese has 14 grams of protein in half a cup. So it is very high in protein. I'm looking for yogurt. So low-fat plain yogurt, 8 ounces of it, has 12 grams of protein. So you get more, the thing, you're going to get the most protein for the least calories, unfortunately, if that concerns you, from animal protein. When you look at 3 ounces of boneless chicken, 27 grams of protein, all right? So, and you're going to get, so if you have a serving of chicken at dinner and you have a turkey sandwich at lunch, or, you know, a salad with turkey breast in it for lunch, and then you snack on jerky, there you're going to easily meet your, and then you you just eat other protein sources throughout the day, and they can be vegetarian sources like nuts and seeds. You'll get your protein level. So this is a great question. So one of the things that happens is people try to limit how much they're eating, so they don't always hit that protein goal. Here is where the protein shake comes in. Yes.
Yum.
So the protein shakes are concentrated protein, and they're easy to just drink down. And so they're definitely a dietary supplement. There's many forms of protein shakes. They have been shown to benefit muscle gain, because they're very easy to take in, and they go up into your muscles very quickly. And like I said, if you are not dairy intolerant, whey protein is probably the best way to go, because it has all of your essential amino acids. It has glutamine in it, and it has immune globulins in it. And the immune globulins are going to help to moderate that inflammatory response you get from exercise. So you'll feel better if you have a whey protein shake, as long as you're not sensitive to whey. If you drink a whey protein shake and you get gas afterwards, or you get indigestion, don't drink the whey protein shake, okay? If you eat a food and it makes you feel bad, even if it's a thing that's generally good for you, it's not good for you. All right. So protein shakes can help you build muscle mass because of the bioavailable amino acids. For weight loss, there are hormones involved in appetite stimulation, like your peptide PYY, which is your peptide tyrosine, and your glucagon-like peptide and ghrelin. And protein influences their production, and PYY and GLP-1 they reduce hunger. So protein increases PYY, GLP-1, which decreases your hunger. So you reduce your appetite, and it also delays your stomach emptying, so it's going to increase your sense of fullness. And it also tends to reduce levels of ghrelin. So you're just going to be less hungry if you eat adequate protein. And so protein also increases your metabolism. They increase your energy expenditure. Your body burns more calories by metabolizing the protein than carbs or fat. So that's the diet-induced thermogenesis. So you have more diet-induced thermogenesis than you get from carbs or from fat. And high-protein diets stimulate gluconeogenesis. That means you'll produce glucose from proteins or fats in the absence of carbs, which will burn extra calories. I'm getting very excited. I'm swatting runs.
You're almost Italian over there.
Yeah. No, actually, I am Jewish. We do this too.
You do that too?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm. So it's been measured. There are studies where they measure and they find that people who eat a lot of protein, they have a measurably higher energy expenditure. What do my perimenopausal and postmenopausal women patients come in complaining of? That they've gained weight right here, and I'm pointing to my belly, otherwise affectionately known as the menopot or the menobelly.
Menopot.
Yes.
Sorry.
It's really nasty. I'm not sure I like the use of that term because it makes us feel bad about having a belly. Makes you feel bad about yourself because getting a belly in your menopause is totally a thing. And most women get some version of it no matter what their size. And we shouldn't feel ashamed of it. Part of why you get it is so that you make estrogen because you're not making estrogen from having a cycle anymore. And your fat does make estrogen. Having said that, if you want to lose some belly fat, if you increase your protein intake from high-quality sources, including protein shakes, it can help you get rid of abdominal fat. And there's the concern that if you have increases in visceral fat, it can cause inflammation, which can link to increased insulin resistance. And there was a study where 37 women who consumed an extra 40 grams of whey protein per day showed a small reduction in abdominal fat compared with those who received a lower protein quality supplement. Like I said, whey protein is the way to go. Whey protein is the way to go.
The way to go. Very funny.
If you're not whey intolerant, if you get gas or indigestion or respiratory symptoms from consuming whey, don't do it. All right. Okay. So let's look at which protein shakes are out there. So which protein shakes are out there? Here's a bunch of them. The first one is, wait for it, whey. whey protein powder. Like I said, the advantage of whey is that it's, I think of all the protein powders, it is the most immediately absorbable, and it contains immune globulins. And it contains glutamine. And glutamine is an amino acid that is healing to your digestive system. It happens to help with nerve function. It happens to heal neuropathy. We give it in high doses to people with any kind of neuropathy. But it also helps you to absorb protein better. And that's why it's beneficial that it's in there. Glutamine also helps to reduce the increased tendency for people who do endurance activities to get sick, to get especially respiratory infections. So whey protein can be helpful that way. You can get casein protein powder as well. Casein also increases muscle mass. And again, and especially if it's micellar casein. Micellar casein is really supposed to help you increase your muscle mass. And so if you can find micellar casein, you can get casein protein in bulk, but micellar casein, again, casein and whey, you have to be careful because if you're dairy intolerant, if you're intolerant to dairy protein, they won't work for you. You won't feel well. You can get egg white protein powder. And by the way, so in you can get 26 grams of protein in a small amount in one shake serving. A serving of egg white protein is 23 grams. Again, if you're egg intolerant, you can't do it. It has no dairy in it, so you don't have to deal with Though this says if you have an issue with lactose intolerance, you'll do better with this. But generally, casein and whey protein powders don't have lactose in them, or they're extremely low in lactose. So you don't actually have to worry about that. You have to be more concerned about if you're dairy protein intolerant. Collagen protein. So let's do a quick reminder. The collagen, a collagen protein powder and a whey protein, a general protein powder shake might not be the same thing. Collagen is going to focus on the amino acids that are in collagen, which is proline, hydroxyproline, and glycine. All right. And it's going to focus on those three amino acids. That's great. And you might want to do that too, because that's going to shore up your muscles and tendons. It's going to shore up your hair. It's going to shore up your skin. And so if you have ligament and tendon issues, and if you have joint issues, collagen protein is great, but it's probably better to also have, you kind of want to have both. The thing about collagen is we don't consume collagen like we used to, because we don't eat the whole animal that like we used to. So if it's mostly collagen peptides, you probably want to do that in addition to a regular protein shake. So yellow pea protein is probably my favorite plant-based protein, because not only is it very absorbable, very hypoallergenic, because we haven't been overexposed to peas, but yellow pea protein is very good for your kidneys. If you have any kind of kidney issue, or if you're trying to, you know, protect age-related kidney decline, or if you have high blood pressure, yellow pea protein is a good one to choose. You can get brown rice protein, which is okay. It's not my favorite, but it's all right. If you like the taste of it, it does have a lot of protein in it. Hemp protein is good, but per unit volume, it doesn't have as much protein. It's not as high in protein in, per unit volume, even as rice protein is. All of the others that I said, they're much higher in protein per serving. You can get pumpkin seed powder protein, which is a little better than pea protein. You can get a mixed protein that has a lot of different things in it, that has different vegetarian sources and might have other things in it, like spirulina or maca. And you can get a spirulina protein powder that has other stuff in it. So my opinion is the best protein powder to take if you're not dairy intolerant is whey. If you are, but then one of the things they didn't mention is you can get protein powders that are made from beef. You can also get bone broth protein powders. What you need to check, though, is if you get bone broth protein powder, you got to make sure that it has all 9 essential amino acids, and not just the amino acids, the proline, hydroxyproline, and the glycine that are in collagen peptide powders. So collagen peptides will help with your joints and your tendons, but it shouldn't, if you're doing collagen protein powder and you're wanting to rebuild your muscle and tendons, and you're trying to get your protein levels up for fat loss and for all the other reasons we talked about, you don't want to just do collagen protein. You want to also do regular protein. And if you're using a powder, you want to have a protein shake and probably also some collagen peptides along with that. So there you go. I think I'm going to start taking a protein shake, you know, where I usually have some protein, a protein snack. So I'm going to take a protein shake sometime in the day. I just haven't been doing that, and I'll get more protein if I do that. All right. So I think I'm going to go. So I think we've talked about protein as much as we want to talk about it for a while. Next week, I feel like I'm going to talk about food trackers. And I also want to touch on sleeping during the pandemic, because a lot of people are having trouble sleeping during the pandemic. So stay tuned next week for more Radio Naturopath when we talk about food trackers and also sleep during the pandemic. All right. So you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.